Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. So if all goes well, hopefully I've got everything connected. Things have been a little last minute here. I've got Gene on the line, and Gene's going to be producing the show as soon as we work out a few bugs. But, unfortunately, we have to work out our bugs on the air. And so we're going to do a little bit of stuff here. I'm going to try to make Gene's line live. And if all works out well, then she should be there. Well, let's find out for sure. And there we go. Gene, are you there? Guess not. Okay. All right, so let's make her line. We're going to mute that line again. We'll see. I'll check in with her periodically, and we'll see what's happening. All right. So as soon as we work out those bugs, then the first voice you hear is going to be Gene's. You know, we're going to do what normally folks would do. We'll get especially our new callers, and this has been a bit of a challenge without a producer, is that we have to. I want to be able to get the folks screened ahead of time, so we don't get some of the some pretty obnoxious, obscene, and some of the other things that have happened to us here that we're trying to avoid, and the fact that I really, there's so much that we can do here. In addition, one of the biggest is going to be the live chat. And I know a lot of people don't want to call into a show because they don't want to go on the air. And that's fine. I got no problem with that at all. You can email, you can get me on Facebook. But I think the best way is going to be this live chat function once we get that squared away. And so that's going to be a big deal. We've got Jonathan Mosley coming in at the bottom of the hour. We've got Claire Lopez coming in at, 15 minutes in the second hour. It's just after 7 here Central Time. And so there's just a ton of things going on. I've got a ton of thoughts swirling in my head. I think every once in a while, maybe it happens to you too, that there's kind of an information overload. And you get so many facts, so many things swirling around, you kind of lose your perspective. And I think that's what's happening to a lot of us right now in the sense of what's going on. It's hard to keep track of everything. It's hard to do a bunch of different things. It's just crazy. All right, Jean's back. Let me see if I can get her line live here. Once I get her line live, then, of course, we can talk off the air. We have all these cool functions. We've got screening room stuff. We've got the mute function. We've got the big red X to cut people off. And, of course, we have the live bright red microphone. Gene, how are you doing there? Are you on the air this time?
Yes, I'm doing great.
Can you see your name there on the screen?
I sure cannot.
Okay.
We've got some technical difficulties here yet. We'll get them worked out.
Well, we got the good part. I have you logged in. I have your name visible, and so here's the way this works: that the producer has the same access to all of the bells, whistles, buttons that I do. And so when this works out, we're going to be a cooperative effort here, and so that'll be able to do a bunch of things that we can't do now. Check in on guests, book people, call folks during the show. Sort of just see what's going on, and it's going to be. And like I say, the live chat, I think, is going to be the biggest one. But having Gene's help is I can't tell you how much that's going to help me and how much that's going to help the show and do all the things that we like to do here even better. Gene, keep working on – I'll tell you, so you can't see to mute yourself, can you?
Yes, I can mute myself.
Wait a minute. No, do you have the – do you have your screen there, but you don't see your name on the studio screen?
I sure don't. No, I just mute myself where the dial pad is.
Okay, tell you what, I'll leave your line live, and then if you just mute yourself until you see your name on the screen, or I'll just check back in with you, or just check back in with me sometime during the show, and we'll see what's going on. Of course, we've got the text going as well. We've got a bunch of ways to communicate here. But let me get back to the main topic, and just hang in there, Gene. We'll get you there. We'll get you organized
perfect.
Probably by next week. What's that now?
I said perfect.
Yeah. Let me get your signal a little stronger, too, so I'll get you a little closer to the microphone and get all that. You folks think this is easy, we're improvising. We're all learning how to do this. And not only are we learning how to do action radio, we're learning how to do radio. Now, I've got some experience, but there's a lot more things that need to be done before we're all experts out here. All right. So the title of the show today, Government Recreates Biblical Leper Colonies Inside Internment Camps. And I've been doing a lot of thinking about this. I've got the CDC document, and I'm going to probably go over that in a few minutes, that basically calls these humanitarian green zones where they want to, put people who have COVID. And it reminded me of biblical leper colonies. In other words, do you remember the movie Ben-Hur, where Charlton Heston, his mother and his sister who live with him in the house of Hur, you know, before the chariot race. They were lepers. They were locked up in a leper colony, and I think they were given leprosy, or they were banished to a leper colony, and of course they picked up leprosy. You know, the biblical disease, which still exists today. I mean, I'm not sure all the details, but I know it hasn't gone away, and yet I don't think we vaccinate for it. I don't think we do a lot of things. I think if you get it, you just cure it. Okay. So the wonderful thing about medical science is that so many things are curable, which leads me to this very strange conclusion that for all the work the CDC does, for all the vaccination, for all the internment camps they want to put people in, like biblical leper colonies, you know, these humanitarian green zones that are going to go from your house to your school to your community to your internment camp, just like Democrat Franklin Roosevelt locked up Japanese Americans because, well, they might be sympathetic to Japan, even though they were loyal Americans. You know, this is something that Democrats do and the governments do, and it happens all the time. And it reminds everybody of what Nazi Germany did, you know, with the eugenics and Dr. Mengele and the various medical experiments they did and the horrible things that happened. In fact, it was doctors that had a huge impact on advancing the Nazi regime. It was doctors who came up with Zyklon B, you know, to exterminate Jews in the death camps. You know, it was doctors that did all the medical experiments. It was doctors that, said that, you know, basically being Jewish was a disease. I mean, doctors don't have a great record, okay? You know, you look at the various torture people, you know, throughout history, and they're usually doctors because they know how to inflict the most pain. You know, this is doctors don't have a great track record. You know, you look at what did I hear recently, that John D. Rockefeller, you know, the oil guy, discovered that he could make medicine from petroleum, you know, somehow that most of our medicines are petroleum based and or something, you know, how it works anyway. So he found out when the medical profession found out that all his petroleum based medicines caused cancer, you know, John D. Rockefeller started the American Cancer Society, which has never found a cure for cancer, by the way, after all the billions of dollars. That to me seems very curious. With that big an effort, you would think that we would be able to cure cancer by now. I think we can, personally. I think that's just that the treatment's being the cure is being withheld because the treatment makes so much more money. In the same way, COVID vaccines are being used instead of COVID cures because the vaccines make so much money. And let me tell you something I heard yesterday that was fascinating. I'm watching Mike Lindell's special, and he had Dr. Shiva on. And I've been in contact with Dr. Shiva. I'm trying to work with him at some point. You know, because I think, I mean, I am convinced that Action Radio is going to go to huge prominence, you know, after the 2022 election, because the Republicans are going to probably take Congress. Hopefully they'll find a way to correct the elections and that Trump will be back in office. And then they're not going to know what to do. This is typical of conservatives. They take office, but they don't know what to do. They're going to be lost. Okay. We do know what to do. We know exactly what to do at Action Radio. In fact, we write bills on it all the time. Given time, I could write a lot more, but you know, we're so busy now trying to work with the show, do the show, you know, promote the show, and do a bunch of other things that if you folks would share the show, we could do a lot more bills and do a lot more work. I mean, it's really that simple. Give me a million listeners, and I will change the national debate, you know, in favor of freedom, okay, and put buildings to shame, put the Democrats in their place. Inspire the population about the possibilities that we write the legislation and we give to the legislators and say, hey, what are you going to do with this? Okay. So instead of the special interest, you know, paying for their legislation in Congress and then passing the laws and dictating them to us, you know, we would write the laws, give them to Congress, and hopefully they would then dictate them to the special interest. I mean, that's how it should work. Okay. So that's the purpose of Action Radio, is to reverse the direction of legislation from us to them rather than them to us. It's just that simple. But we still keep them. We still keep the legislative constitutional function at the local, state, and federal level. And I'm not trying to change that. I'm just trying to change the legislation they get. Anyway, point being, so back to the gulags. So I'm listening to Dr. Shiva. Dr. Shiva is talking on a Mike Lindell special, and he asked the audience a peculiar question. He says, how many people think that Big Pharma has lost money in the last, 10, 20 years? And, of course, we're all laughing, right? Said, no, they haven't lost money. They're making billions of dollars. We know how much they're making on the vaccines. They're making billions of dollars. He says, no, the truth is that they've lost money. And one of the reasons is because Dr. Shiva was one of the leaders in what they're now calling, you know, personalized, individualized medicine. In other words, it's tailored to you. In fact, the original messenger RNA creator, Dr. Robert Malone, that was why he did it, was so that the messenger RNA would be tailored to you. So your specific, type, age, gender, weight, history, genetics, all that kind of stuff will be taken into account so that the medicine you get is specific to you. Well, Big Pharma doesn't operate that way. Big Pharma is one size fits all. You know, they're going to give the same vaccine to a 5-day-old that they would give to a 90-year-old, you know, even though a 5-day-old and a 90-year-old have virtually nothing in common. Other than the fact they're both alive. But other than that, you got two completely different people, all right? They would give the same vaccine to people around the world. You know, the same person would get one in Vietnam, would get one in New Zealand, would get one in Tahiti, would get one in Brazil, would get one here. Well, does that make sense? Well, I don't know. Everything's different. Diet, culture, history, genetics, population, you know, biology, immunity, water. You know, everything is different as you go around the world. So you can't have one size fits all. Yeah, that's what Big Pharma wanted to do, and that's why they're losing, because the rise of personalized, individualized medicine has made the Big Pharma model of one-size-fits-all medicine not work, except for one thing, vaccines. All right, why vaccines? Well, because anything they do, they can't be charged for. There's no liability. The vaccine companies have an exemption from liability, which we can change, by the way, because I've written a lot of change that. You just haven't shared it enough, so it's not in the national news yet. So don't blame me. I wrote the bill. It's on you now to share it, okay? WriteYourLaws.com. It's right there, WriteYourLaws.com. You know, full product liability on vaccine manufacturers. There it is. You share the bill. You get it in the national consciousness. You get it on the talk shows. You get it in the news. You get enough people supporting it, Congress is going to go for it. If the choice is going for it and not getting elected, they're going to go for it. Okay, so we've done our part. The bill is out there. Now it's your turn, okay? So you can change this, and if you don't change this, then don't blame me. You know, because we've it's out there. It's out there for you to do. You can change things. You just have to kind of, you know, make that leap and say to yourself, you know what? You know, I think I can do this. So don't be skeptical. Stop posting memes. Stop posting comments and do something. Share the bills and let's get this thing rolling here. Anyway, so back to the situation. I'm probably sounding too arrogant. I'm not trying to blame everybody, but I'm just saying the technology, the method, the websites, it's all there for you to be an activist. You just have to start doing it. I mean, it really is that simple. You want to save your country. You want to save yourself. You want to save your family. You know, become an activist. I mean, unfortunately, the choice is being forced upon you. I'm just giving you the means to fix it. All right. So vaccines are the biggest growth industry in Big Pharma, and this is why they're pushing it. Okay. So it's in the interest of Big Pharma to perpetuate the pandemic as long as possible, because the pandemic, as we know, we've talked about many times, is nothing but a marketing tool for vaccines. The other thing about it is they had to, in order to ensure the perpetual sale of vaccines, they had to have new reasons for people to get vaccinated multiple times. And that's where the variants come in. So they designed a vaccine for a specific, you know, COVID-19 strain, the original one, which no longer exists. So they're giving you a vaccination for something that doesn't exist. And then, they're wondering why people are getting infected and ending up at the hospital. You know, and then the CDC doesn't, you know, count vaccinated people as COVID victims. It only counts unvaccinated people, all right, or what I would call normal people, all right? So they're doing everything possible except the one thing that would be the easiest, and that's cure the disease. Because they don't want to cure the disease. They don't want to cure the virus. This is a business, okay? Which gets back to the whole idea of these internment camps that everybody's, fussing about from the CDC. Because the CDC is a business. The FDA is a business. The National Institute for Health is a business. These are not regulatory agencies. The National Institute for Health gives out your money to universities and other programs and companies so they can research, you know, new drugs, particularly vaccines. And now you know why they use vaccines, right? You know, the FDA authorizes the use of the vaccines that the NIH, you know, gave the money to study to create. That's what the FDA does. The CDC perpetuates the disease so that the FDA can authorize more stuff, so that the NIH can give more grants, so that Big Pharma can make more money, and then give kickbacks in the form of royalties and licenses to the FDA, CDC, and NIH. You see how it works? And it's all done with your tax dollars. And there's no liability. They can't lose. All right? So the idea of them having these contingency plans for these camps, you know, you would think that the, you know, they don't want to, I don't think they want to round everybody up and kill everybody, because that'd be bad for business. I mean, it's just that cynical, okay? So the folks that are on one side saying that the CDC, and I've got, like I say, we went over this the other day. I can do it again, you know, give me a call. But, you know, 215-383-3830, all right? So that, you know, but the thing is, it'd be bad for business. In fact, if the CDC wanted to kill everybody, why are they not stopping people at the border? Okay, so they're bringing in several million people with COVID. Why? Because it's good for business. Okay, this is a business model. So if they can scare you into camps, and they can say that, well, you better take the vaccine or you might end up a camp. it might end up at a camp. Do they intentionally want to have the camps, or are they using that as a psychological marketing tool? I don't know, but I know a lot of people are panicked about these camps, which I think is the intent. I really think this is business, okay? I think it's just business. I think everything they do is business. The CDC is a profit-making business with some regulatory functions to give them the illusion that they're a government agency, which they're not, okay? Except for one function, and that is to stop people at the border with an obvious disease that is contagious, like Ebola. You know, someone comes into the country with Ebola symptoms at the border, the CDC can stop them. I mean, that is their prevention function, but that's it. Gene, just to let you know, you appeared on my board, then you disappeared. Keep trying. We'll get this card away. All right. So this is what I think is so fascinating about this entire thing, is that we have this, I really think that these camps are not intended to exist, because this document was written in July of 2020. So this is over a year old. And the fact that it's coming out now surprises me, because if it came out then during the lockdowns, you know, in fact, July is when the pandemic really ended. Okay. You know, the if you look at the actual CDC numbers from a year ago, all right, over a year ago, it started at the end of January, peaked April 15th, and was gone by July 4th. That was the trend. From April 15th, there was a steady downward trend at about a 45-degree angle on the graph to basically a zero death count shortly after July 4th. Okay. Now, it never go completely to zero, because, you know, COVID's around, and it's going to be around because of what they call animal reservoirs. So in other words, COVID is in animals as well as people, and it crosses the animal-person, you know, boundary, because they engineered that, the Wuhan lab, with gain of function. Okay. So if you remember the story we covered on the fact that 40% of the deer sampled in the Michigan wilderness have COVID antibodies. Well, how did they get that? And then I heard another report from Natural News that said, wait a minute, if COVID's that bad, why aren't the deer dropping dead? You know, because they're not being vaccinated, and they're certainly not wearing masks, okay? So, but they've got antibodies, which means they literally have herd immunity. So the deer herds have herd immunity. See, it works, okay? So if left alone, we would have been fine, but no, it didn't work that way. Let me try Gene. Gene's on the line again. And again, oh, it's going to be so cool to have a producer. Gene, are you live? Can you see your board yet?
Hello. I was able to see my board, and then I did something and I lost it. So I should be able to get it back up in just a few minutes.
Okay. I'll leave your line live. Mute yourself until you're ready, and come join us, you know, as soon as you can.
Perfect.
This
okay.
is good news. Yeah, but we need to get you a little bit louder, because I think I'm overbalancing you. So either get closer to your mic, turn your gain up a little bit, I want to try and equalize that as we go. So again, I apologize for the technical work that we have to do on the air, but a lot of times this is the only time we can do it. And so it's Blog Talk. You know, I don't have a huge studio. I'm running off a computer. Okay, I don't have a huge studio where I can kind of play with stuff in my spare time. So we only have 2 hours a day, and that goes to the show. All right. So if anybody, you know, has any, you know, ideas about this that we have here. Now, let me just find the document, because I know I've got it here somewhere. Oh, here we go. So this is what you want to look for. And Natural News has it. A bunch of folks have it. We went over it ourselves, too. Interim operational considerations for implementing the shielding approach to prevent COVID-19 infections in humanitarian settings. Now, most of that is BS weasel wording. I'm not exactly sure what they want with a humanitarian setting. But this is how they describe, you know, the shielding approach. In other words, they want to shield COVID victims, high-risk victims, from other people. So they don't put you in a biblical leper colony, okay? And they want to, you know, basically isolate you until you're dead, which is crazy, because as we know, and this is the weird part, COVID, we knew the cure for COVID back March 2nd. Dr. Zelenko probably knew it before then. March 2nd, not this year, last year. Okay? So let me just give you a little bit of a brief here. I'll read the beginning, I'll read the ending, because it's really kind of funny. Actually, let me start with the second section. What is the shielding approach? And this is July 26, 2020. So this is last year. Lockdowns are underway. You know, masks are underway. And they're talking about this thing. And they said the shielding approach aims to reduce the number of severe COVID-19 cases by limiting contact between individuals at higher risk from developing severe disease, as opposed to regular disease, and the general population. Okay, high-risk individuals would be temporarily relocated to safe or green zones established at the household, neighborhood, camp, sector, or community level, depending on the context and setting. They would have minimal contact with family members and other low-risk residents. Okay, so they're going to separate, you know, the sick people from the not sick people in a biblical leper colony, you know, and internment camp. So that was the plan. But, you know, like I say, all they needed to do. Oh, Gene, looks like you muted yourself. So it looks like you've got your. You know, do you see again, sorry, a little technical stuff here. Do you see the four squares there? See how you muted yourself? Gene? Gene can't talk to me because she muted herself. we'll talk in a minute. All right, Gina, I'm gonna play my Santa Rosa Volunteers piece in a bit, and we'll have a few minutes to do that, and then Jonathan will join us. And you can greet him too. It's gonna be kind of. Oh, Gene, you're back live. There you go. Okay, hi. Hello, Gene. No, she's not back live. She made herself live. This is the fun of a producer. So we have, all right, just to explain, if you look at the Blog Talk Studio screen someday, if you have your own Blog Talk show, you'll see that we have four screens. We have a live microphone, which is red. We have a blue headset, which is mute. We have a green two-person icon, which is where we can talk to each other off the air. And we have the big red X when I want to drop your butts. So that's how that works. All right. So there's the shielding approach. I know I'm jumping around a lot, but believe me, ADHD drives the show. That's how it works. All right. So the last paragraph, it says right here, let me just get all the way down, scroll, just to give you an idea of where the summary. The shielding approach is an ambitious undertaking which may prove effective in preventing COVID-19 infection among high-risk populations if well managed. While the premise is based on mitigation strategies used in the United Kingdom, I took it from Britain. Great. We know how that's working out. There is no empirical evidence whether this approach will increase, decrease, or have no effect on morbidity and mortality during the COVID-19 epidemic in various humanitarian settings. So in other words, they're promoting a program that they have no idea if it works or not. But they still think it's a good idea, so they're going to promote it. Now, does that boost your faith in government? Okay. Public health not only – this is where they extend their mission. Public health not only focuses on the eradication of disease, but addresses the entire spectrum of health and well-being. This is why they got into gun control, right, CDC? Populations displaced due to natural disasters or war. The CDC is now into war? And conflicts are already, already fragile and have people who've been through that are already fragile and have experienced increased mental, physical, and or emotional trauma. So your public health bureaucrat is now going to handle your physical, mental, and emotional trauma all at the same time. I think they're actually causing your physical, mental, and emotional trauma by what they're doing with this. Anyway, it says the shielding approach is intended to alleviate stress on the healthcare system and circumvent the negative economic consequences of long-term containment measures and lockdowns by protecting the most vulnerable. So in other words, instead of being locked down, you're going to be put in a camp. So instead of locking down everybody, they're going to lock down some people in a camp. Isn't that great? And they're trying to alleviate stress on the healthcare system, not on you. They don't give a damn about you. You're the product. Well, actually, you're the customer. Okay, you're the customer of the vaccines. So they're trying to make it easier on the healthcare system, and they're going to say they're going to promote the vaccines and do all this kind of stuff. Otherwise, they're going to lock you up in a camp. You see how this works? Okay, so I still think it's more a threat than a reality. I think the reason they're doing this is to scare more and more people into taking vaccines. All right, let me play Santa Rosa Volunteers for today. We'll get Jonathan in after that. And it's going to be interesting, We're going to talk about free speech here and the lack thereof from the Sedition Act. And, of course, you can relate that directly to today. Back in about 8 minutes. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. This week, I want to break from the Federalist and Anti-Federalist papers to consider one of the many aberrations in the early days of the land of the free. That is the Sedition Act of 1798. Granted, this is always grouped with the companion bills on aliens, but I see them as separate issues. Why would a new government, formed from colonies under rules of sedition from a foreign monarch, bring about that same tyranny into our government so early in its existence? The Constitution was ratified on September 17, 1787. The Bill of Rights was ratified on December 15, 1791. So it was already in the supreme law of the land that Congress could make no law that abridged the freedom of speech, thus making any subordinate law on sedition unconstitutional automatically. And yet, it happened. All power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Therefore, if you have a government of good laws and yet bad officials who crave the preservation of power more than the alleged guarantees of freedom, freedom takes second place. You can see that in evidence throughout the entire government response to a coronavirus that would have run its course naturally in about 10 weeks, just like the flu every year, and would have been gone by the summer of 2020 when all viruses fade until the winter. And yet, look at the massive amount of power taken from the people in a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Sedition is defined in my online dictionary as conduct or speech inciting people to rebel against the authority of a state or monarch. So what did the government put into a law that so obviously came from the former ruler of the colonies into the new government of the United States? The Sedition Act is titled An Act for the Punishment of Certain Crimes Against the United States. In other words, conduct or speech that criticizes the government. Where have we heard that before? Section 1 of the Sedition Act reads, "Be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America, in Congress assembled, that if any persons shall unlawfully combine or conspire together with intent to oppose any measure or measures of the government of the United States, which are or shall be directed by proper authority, or to impede the operation of any law of the United States, or to intimidate or prevent any person holding a place or office in or under the government of the United States from undertaking, performing, or executing his trust or duty, and if any person or persons with intent as aforesaid shall counsel, advise, or attempt to procure any insurrection, riot, unlawful assembly, or combination, whether such conspiracy, threatening, counsel, advice, or attempt shall have the proposed effect or not, he or they shall be deemed guilty of a high misdemeanor." This, of course, violates the entire First Amendment, except with regard to religion. It gets worse. Section 2 says in part, "And be it further enacted, that if any person shall write, print, utter, or publish, or shall cause or procure to be written, printed, uttered, or published, or shall knowingly and willingly assist or aid in writing, printing, uttering, or publishing any false, scandalous, and malicious writing or writings against the government of the United States, or either House of the Congress of the United States, or of the President of the United States, with intent to defame the said government, or either House of the said Congress, or the said President, or to bring them, or either of them, into contempt or disrepute, or to excite against them, or either or any of them, the hatred of the good people of the United States." In other words, saying anything against the government of the United States or anyone in it is a crime punishable by jail and fines. This effectively creates political prisoners in the United States, much like the innocent people in the D.C. Gulag jail for being in the Capitol building January 6th. If that were not bad enough, within the Sedition Act is probably the most dangerous provision to individual liberty that I have yet seen in the founding documents, and provides a shocking precursor to the future neutralization of our jury system and the supremacy of the government courts over the people. Section 3. "And be it further enacted and declared that if any person shall be prosecuted under this act for the writing or publishing any libel aforesaid, it shall be lawful for the defendant upon the trial of the cause to give an evidence in his defense, the truth of the matter contained in publication charged as a libel, and the jury who shall try the cause shall have a right to determine the law and the facts under the direction of the court, as in other cases." The key words here are "under the direction of the court." The whole point of a jury is to not only determine the guilt of the defendant, the restitution in a civil case, but most important for the jury is to determine whether the laws implied are fair, just, constitutional, and are not arbitrary and capricious reservoirs of unlimited government power over the people. Jurors can do whatever they want because they are the representatives of the people over the judges who work for the government and therefore work for the people. And yet, as virtually every judge instructs their juries, that they can only judge the facts of the case and not the law. That lie is repeated every day in courts all across the country. And now I see where it came from. Section 3 is really saying that the juries, and therefore the people, are under the direction of the court. What the Sedition Act really does is makes criticism of the government a crime, and allows government judges to direct the juries that would hear any case under this act, thus destroying the right of free speech and to redress grievances against the government, and to due process and the right to a jury trial of one's peers. One could imagine anyone charged under this act would be guilty until proven innocent, and then ruined by government if they were proved innocent. Can you think of any parallels to the rights of free speech today? The Sedition Act was approved July 14, 1798, signed by John Adams, President of the United States. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. All right. I'm back live. I got to check and see if that's loud enough, too. I'm wondering, where so many things we do here. It's all volume levels, and I'm still after Block Talk to give us those nice little dials so we can tell exactly how loud everything is. So Jean's out there. Jean's going to make herself live again as soon as she can, and we're sort of, like I say, we're learning the process here of including, you know, Jean, our life coach, as producer. And so we shall see. We shall see what happens as we go. All right, just waiting for Jonathan to call in, and we'll get on with our legal report. And we have so many things to talk about today. In the meantime, let me just see if I can give you a couple. There's a bunch of DeSantis things. Oh, I know what I was going to tell you. This is a quick one, too. Senator Rick Scott, I was watching him on One American News the last actually few days, and he keeps talking about, you know, the stimulus bill, the $3.5 trillion stimulus bill. It's too much money. They're spending too much. It's reckless. You know, and I'm thinking, you gutless gelding. You know, this is another term, because he could say it's not a reconciliation bill and put a filibuster on it. I mean, any senator could. I'm picking on Rick Scott, A, because he's my senator here in Florida, one of them, him and Rubio, and also because it's not a reconciliation bill. And any one of those folks could say it, and yet they're not doing it. It's crazy. And so it's driving me absolutely nuts. So I'm going to give him a call myself. So look up Senator Rick Scott, you know, if you're in Florida, and look up your senator anywhere you are. Anywhere in the country, any senator that you think might actually do this. It looks like Joe Manchin is going to have more impact on this. But what you want to do is, give him a call and say, hey, the infrastructure bill, excuse me. The infrastructure bill is not a reconciliation bill. Put a damn filibuster on it and stop this nonsense. They could do that, but the gutless geldings won't do that. So let's see what happens if you give him a call. Okay, Gene, try and put Jonathan, both of you in the screening room and see if you can talk to him. So I'm going to leave that to you to give that a shot. Again, I'm doing, directions over the air here. We have Jean producing, but we still have a few bugs to work out. So let's see if she can do that. Talk to Jonathan. If that doesn't work, I'll just make Jonathan live. And so you guys talk, and I'll know it works if Jean, you can put Jonathan's little box there under his phone number, by clicking on that, and we'll see if that works out. In the meantime, I'm going to play Jonathan's theme. That'll give us a minute to work all this stuff. This is so much fun. Again, once we figure this out, it's going to be fabulous how this is all working. So let me play Jonathan's theme, and we'll get that right to you, because I happen to like this. Once I hear Jonathan's theme, I get really inspired to talk about the law, so that's why I do it. It probably started with an episode of Perry Mason many years ago, that yearning to understand the law so that you can help people who don't understand the law. The arguments, the debates, the mental trial beyond the actual trial, all the while trying to do the best you can for your client. He walks the halls of justice, pictures on the wall of great minds who advanced the law. He walks not in the black robes of the judge, but the suit and tie of the attorney. Known as counselor, lawyer, or any number of other names, and after years of hard work, these are the people accepted to the bar and allowed to practice law, especially at trial. For it is at trial many times that the great decisions of our society are realized. It's where the laws get tested. It's where juries have lost their power to judge the laws and not just the facts. It's where judges make up their own law, especially through interpretations. But if you are ever in trouble, your attorney can be your best friend. We are privileged at Action Radio to have one of those practitioners of the law, someone who knows the Constitution, who knows about due process, who takes the rights of the individual as sacred and will fight for them with all he's got. It is at this time every week that we immerse ourselves in the law. So join us in the law as we go to the Action Radio Legal Report with Jonathan Mosley. All right, Jonathan, sorry, we're doing a little technical stuff here. We're bringing Gina as a producer, and we're having a little bit of trouble connecting in the screening room so that she can talk to you before you come on the air. But you're live. You're live right now, and I'm hearing a little bit of crazy stuff in the background. Gene's not live. Gene, you can make yourself live, too, so feel free, and then you can join us as well. But that's what's happening, Jonathan. We're improving. We're making leaps and bounds, but we have just a little bit of stuff to work out in the meantime. So how are you, sir? What's going on?
Hi. I hope you can hear me. Is it working? Because it's important. Technology is ruling our lives, and I'm also out in the country after last week being also out in the country in a completely different part of the country. I'm actually relocating here to get a good cell phone signal and let me know if there's a problem.
But, no, actually, this is the best you've sounded in a long time. This is great. No, it sounds good.
If I were paranoid, I would think that somebody put up a cell phone blocker near my townhouse, and now they don't know where I am. So
I don't know. They would have blocked me.
It's so crazy.
I say crazy stuff every day here. And, I know China doesn't listen anymore, and they took out Taiwan at the same time. That looks suspicious. But considering they've been with us since the beginning, and China was one of the first on the international board to come on. So if you want to get suspicious, that to me is very suspicious, especially, but they didn't do it to my Taiwan shows when I told Trump to make a speech to Xi Jinping saying, let Taiwan be Taiwan. No, excuse me, Hong Kong. I'm sorry. Let Hong Kong be Hong Kong. And they still kept us on after that. So who knows? Maybe it's all my COVID stuff.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I so, to do stuff.
Go ahead.
Leak stuff with Larry Clinton. And things like that. But anyway, can you hear me? So another bad decision from a judge. I wanted to give like a multiple choice. Do you want to talk about Texas suing or the Biden suing Texas, or about Dominion's lawsuits about the 3 November, which just came out?
Well, we got time. Let's do both of those because I think they're both relevant. Let's start with Texas. Texas is a little bit older. That happened a couple of weeks ago. But there's so many bad decisions. There's the Cruz judgment that's bad. There's the judge that wanted to demand that a probation person, take a vaccine as part of their probation. That's bad. We've got the bad decisions of the EEOC and OSHA saying that employers can mandate vaccines when they can't, because I've clearly printed along my Facebook page which says they can't. So we've got so many issues to choose from, and we've got our local folks here, in hospitals all across Florida that don't want vaccine mandates themselves, and hoping that we can get them some help. So let's start with Texas and just kind of go from there, see what and we can just explain the issues, and we don't have to, do it more like a buffet style as opposed to, analyze every last little bit of it. How's that sound?
Right. So of course, and throughout these analysis, I want to remember what my friend Norm Bradford says, who's a legal analyst and strategist. He says, you often got the right answer to the wrong question.
Hmm.
And so you got to know this. Like, for example, the news media will report that the Supreme Court says you can't do X. But when you read it, it's like, no, that's not what they said. They said you can't do X in the way that they were proposing to do it. And you can't do X if the question is asked in a really stupid way by lawyers who don't know which way is up. But the news will say, no, you can't ban abortion or whatever. Like, no, you can't ban abortion that way. This is throughout all these things. We know, and it's becoming increasingly clear, even NBC News reported that as many as 18% of the hundreds of thousands of people coming across our border are infected with COVID-19. Another report, a leaked report that was a presidential briefing to Biden, put it at 20%. And we're having this reports of a 900% increase in these border in infections of the border, including Border Patrol. And there's been reporting that the Biden administration is actually facilitating it, not just looking the other way or failing to stop it. They're actually transporting illegal aliens from the border throughout the United States. I mean, some reporting is right, even transport into the United States across, you know, using military aircraft or other aircraft and things like that. So Governor Abbott issued an executive order saying that that any private, and we know, we've seen the reporting of them dumping them at bus stops, you know, in the middle of cities with no planning, without telling anybody, without telling the things like that. So
Republican cities.
And then
this is political. These are Republican. These are districts where they want to change the demographics. See, I think of this as a mercenary project. I think they're hiring illegal aliens as mercenaries, paying them to be here, and with the sole purpose of voting illegally to change our elections. I think that's what really is the basis of this. So I look at this as an invasion. I look at illegal aliens as combatants. They have no constitutional rights. And so the Biden administration is basically giving aid and comfort to, or actually facilitating, you know, they are the mafia, the international mafia that's bringing these people in for the sole purpose of destroying the country. So to me, this is a treasonous thing that they are doing. But I think if we stop thinking of them as illegal aliens, but actually think of them as mercenaries, you know, as foreign invaders, you know, if they were uniformed, you know, we could declare war on them. You know, I think they need to up the ante of how we can these people. And the Biden insurrection, because there's certainly not a lawful administration.
Right. So the thing is that and Andy Biggs is formulating articles of impeachment against the Secretary of DHS for bringing hundreds of thousands of COVID cases into our into the country and spreading them around.
Well, how do you impeach a secretary? I never understood that. He's not you only impeach presidents. That's why you can't impeach Biden, because he's not a lawful president.
No.
So you just remove him from office for being a fraud. But go ahead. How do you do a secretary?
You can impeach any executive branch officer.
Oh, okay.
And it's probably used in this case. I think it is well deserved to impeach Biden, but it is probably underused. You know, but the idea that it's only for presidents probably limits the effective use of the impeachment power.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, where it can be, you know, because someone can say, well, maybe the president will be impeached, but, you know, the other thing is, well, I might lose my job, could actually make things more effective. So in response, Governor Abbott ordered that the state police, I said, what is it, DPL, I forget what it stands for, if they have probable cause, which of course nobody pays any attention to, you know, because some people say, well, it's like, you know, driving while brown, even though the people are coming from 100 different countries across our border.
Some of them white people.
But obviously they have to have sufficient reason under standard law. But if they do, he's ordered them to stop them and return them back to the border patrol, wherever they were coming from, and not allow to spread COVID all around the state of Texas and around the country. Now, this is interesting because you know that this is going to eventually end up in the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court is going to be asked to decide, are you going to pander to the illegal alien crowd, and, you know, or are you going to protect the country from a pandemic? Are you going to admit that, you know, protecting the public health is not that important compared to the illegal aliens? Or are you going to side with the protecting the public health in all the hysteria that the judges have so far, you know, been willing to, you know, have been willing to, have so far been wetting their pants over, that they would not dare to be seen as endangering the public health? So this is a brilliant political move by Abbott. I don't know if he planned it this way, but somebody I think did, is that he's pitting the pandemic against gatecrashers. And the Biden administration, you know, cheerfully threw themselves off that cliff and set up what will ultimately be a U.S. Supreme Court challenge with all the attendant publicity for the next several years. So this is going to go up to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is already sided with, you know, control against the Obama administration, in favor of controlling of enforcing the immigration laws. And this is not the Ninth Circuit, so there's going to be an appeal fairly shortly, I would imagine. And this will be all this news, against, and so the Democrats are losing the suburban vote. And this is going to accelerate. This is just a big campaign advertisement for the Republicans because the Democrats are so indoctrinated in their ideas. But this is going to go up. So the problem is that he said that the Biden administration sued, saying that to interfere with, if they dump people off at the bus stop, in the middle of town, mm-hmm. and they then on a bus or something like that, that somehow that's interfering with the operations of the immigration system of the Biden administration. And they found a judge, of course, to fall for it.
That's the mistake. That's where they screwed up, because it's got nothing to do with immigration. It's self-protection of the state. It's the police powers of the state. Just like the when the states blocked access to during COVID initially, when they said out-of-state citizens can't come in-state citizens can't leave, and everybody gets tested and quarantined. What's the difference?
Right. This is where, this is where they, they asked the wrong question. He answered the wrong question, or wanted to answer the wrong question.
Okay.
Because what he does is that, he said that, they sued saying that the private transportation is, and furthermore, the head of the Texas DPL said, look, we're still studying this. We're, because not a lot of times what happens is Congress passes a law,
mm-hmm.
then it comes to the agency, spend some time figuring out how they're going to implement it. And they may issue protocols, procedures, even regulations to get down into the nuts and bolts of how this is going to happen. And Texas's law enforcement says, look, we haven't even figured out how we're going to do this yet.
Right.
So this is totally premature. And they put in an affidavit in the lawsuit saying this is premature. We're not doing it yet. We have to figure it out first.
Huh.
So don't do it. He told the judge, don't do anything. Well, the judge, again, I want to point out every one of these principles I'm talking about, if it was a liberal if it was liberal policy on every single thing, they would be coming down the other way. The fact that it's still being developed, we can't make a decision because they're still it's not ripe yet. But this judge wanted to rush in and make an anti-conservative point. So everything everything I talk about is completely inconsistent based on whether you're a liberal or conservative in your cause. So anyway, so he came down, and they tried to argue that the state police is going to stop, even though the state police says, well, we don't know yet how we're going to do it. They're going to stop contractors with whom DHS has contracted to transport illegal immigrants. Well, that's not what the order says. The order says that order doesn't say anything about private transportation, which is under contract to the Department of Homeland Security. But so they change that. The one thing you get the right answer to the wrong question, or they answer the question you didn't ask, and so the lawsuit changed the circumstance. The judge leaped off a cliff and answered a question that nobody was asking, and says that the federal law preempts the governor's order because the private transportation is an extension of the Biden administration program. Now, in this letter and in the things, there are damning things about how, it basically admits that they're using private transportation to usher gushers of illegal aliens across the border and throughout the United States. And the other thing that's a problem is that what our Supreme Court hasn't figured out or doesn't want to figure out is that preemption of federal law has to do with congressional statutes and the Constitution and other things. There is no preemption by a federal policy to ignore the law. If there's a law and the federal government, the executive branch says, nah, we're not going to enforce that, that has no preemptive supremacy at all. but nobody has accepted. I mean, to violate the executive branch violating the law, federal law, does not preempt state law. But that's what's been going on all along, is that there is a policy of the U.S. government to violate the law, and we're supposed to, you know, accept that as supreme, and it's not. But that, you know, that's a big part of it, and there are a lot of bad precedents about that, and especially when Arizona did it. But the thing is, when Arizona was trying to overcome in 2010, to overcome the Obama administration's, which is, didn't start with them, refusal to enforce immigration law. But here, like I say, this pits two compelling interests against each other, which is why the Biden doctrine, you know, what do they call it, ideologues, should have, you know, they should have held back. But the problem is they can't. If you laid out to them why you should not do this, they just cannot. It's like a kid with the chocolate cake in the middle of the table. They just cannot control themselves. So the judge issued an injunction, but again, here's the judge saying the numbers speak for themselves. For the four-month period from March through June 2021, Customs and Border Patrol data shows over 721,000 attempted entries along the southwest border. In the Rio Grande Valley alone, 330,000 migrants have been recorded in the last 10 months, up 478% in the same time last year. I mean, while the judge sides against them, his description of it is like a campaign ad against the Democrats. But then he says, oh, but you know, the states are powerless to interfere with
It seems a very convenient use of preemption powers. In other words, they use it when they want to. They don't use it when they don't. Democrat judges, liberal judges, are very fond of stopping a policy and then letting it go through the courts, whereas Republican, you know, gutless geldings will usually let a policy go until it's stopped by the court, you know, maybe a year or two later, if at all. And so they're doing it backwards. And so what Abbott needs to do is say, we're going to go ahead with this policy anyway. It's got nothing to do with immigration. These are people that we would do for any population in our state that has a contagious disease, you know, that we want to it just so happens they happen to be in the country illegally. And he can invoke the 14th Amendment, as we've talked about on the show. Citizens of the United States are citizens of the state in which they reside. Non-citizens of the United States, a.k.a. illegal aliens, are not citizens of the state in which they reside and therefore can be removed from the state in which they reside. You know, in this case, they can be taken back to the border. And so it's a very strange situation. I gotta try and he's back in. I want to get Bianchi before he disappears again. And because we're having, like I say, we're doing some phone things here. And I let me explain to him exactly. Hey, Bianchi, just to let you know, we're Gene's going to be producing, but we're having a little trouble doing the screening room. So this is why we're having a couple of issues this morning. And so I'm glad you called back. But let me get you on the program here, because we're going to have, well, I guess Claire's not going to join us for a while. But, yeah, what do you think so far, Bianchi?
I feel like a guinea pig.
And why do you feel like a guinea pig? Jonathan had the same thing. Everybody does. Yeah, go ahead.
I've been experimented. With your new producer, but no. Sometimes back, you made the statement about how American citizens were rejected from coming into states, and if they did, they had to be quarantined for what, 14 days.
Yeah, and Jonathan, why didn't that end up in the court case? I mean, that seems to be the most. And even though I disagree with it, they did it. And it was approved by the judiciary. So why, even though if I disagree with the policy, I think it's wrong, why can't we use that? Or did they use that in the court case?
No, and that's an excellent point. But see, that's where you get into the problem that judges typically, well, again, inconsistently, but typically they decide only the questions that the attorneys put in front of them. So if the attorneys fail to that in front of them, then the judge won't consider that.
Well, what kind of stupid attorneys they have? We thought and we're not attorneys. Go ahead, Bianchi.
Jonathan, did not Justice Roberts do that on the Affordable Health Act, Obamacare, when what was put before him was the Commerce Clause, and then he came back with a butt on a tax?
No, right. That's why I say they do it. They should not do it, and they don't do it when it advances, you know, when it would hold them accountable. But then they're inconsistent when it advances the big state, you know, the big state, deep state agenda. So they are inconsistent about it. But typically, you know, the judge is not going to help the conservative position on something. But they will step in. I mean, because that's one of the reasons why what Roberts did was so extraordinary. But they'll do it if it helps the other side. So, yeah, it's pretty outrageous. So I hope now again they get a chance to. If I were Governor Abbott or if I were advising him, I would say, look, mm-hmm. We're not stopping contractors. We're talking about people who are dumped in the middle of towns. In parks and things like that, and so we're going to keep, like you said, we're going to do it anyway. You know, try and stop me, and because that would force the judge to then admit mm-hmm. that he's, you know, he's off on a tangent somewhere. You know, he's in the, you know, the judge is over in the next county in terms of the issues. He's not talking about what Governor Abbott is talking about. Ships passing in the.
Well, I agree with you. This is what they should be doing, is challenging these things when the judges are wrong. You know, this is how you do it. Democrats do it all the time. They just, you know, if they want to do a policy, they just do it. They say, go ahead and stop me. You know, this is what sanctuary cities are all about. They're illegal as hell, but they keep doing it because nobody stops them. But, you know, this is within within the state of Texas. Okay. It's a domestic, you know, illness issue. It's a public health issue. It's not an immigration issue. The immigration issue is at the border, where they violated Texas's state border by bringing all these people in. So if anything, the federal government's actually committing a crime by forcing people on Texas that they know are sick, you know, so in other words, to spread COVID so they can increase the business at the CDC. Because I really think that's what's going on here. But they have to resist, and they can, and they should say to the federal government, go ahead and try and stop us. How is the federal government going to stop them, you know, then from bringing people back to the border?
I'm not so much arguing that people, you know, ignore the jurisdictions of courts, although it should, you know, they are going way overbroad. But I think, you know, if I were the governor, I'd say, look, you're not talking about what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is not what I'm talking about. So we're going to ignore your order because you're talking about something else. I don't know what you're talking about. You know, you're talking about contractors, you know, that are an extension mm-hmm. of the thing. That's got nothing to do with what we're doing. So therefore, I'm going to assume that your order has nothing to do with what I'm doing, and we're just going to keep doing it.
That makes sense. Yeah.
You know that, but that's the political side of me more than the lawyer side of me. But and then you force the judge to say, okay, yeah, I know that, you know, I changed the fact pattern to hide the fact that I'm wrong. And so I'm just going to totally admit that I'm completely wrong and I have no excuse. No excuse, sir. I'm going to order you to stop doing completely lawful.
They got this supremacy thing that they think that anything that has to do with immigration is supremacy. But it's not really true, because the only thing in the Constitution is on uniform rules of naturalization. And this, again, has nothing to do with that. That's, you know, and the federal government jurisdiction ends at the border. It ends, I mean, this is, I don't know where how big the actual border is, but there's a mythical line between the state border of Texas and the border of Mexico. And that imaginary line right in the middle of that tiny little, those two bodies is the United States border. And that's the only place these folks have any jurisdiction. So once you get inside the border of Texas, you know, unless they're apprehending somebody who's in the country illegally, which is what they used to do, then, you know, it's too bad you can't sue them for what they're not doing. But that'd be kind of interesting, too. All right, Pianki, do you have a question? Because I want to get a couple more issues in here if we can. Pianki?
Well, it looks to me is that this is going to be a showdown between the states and the federal government. It's too bad there's not more states that's using this legal tactic to protect their border and the people of the states.
Well, we've talked about ways they can do that too. Asset forfeiture, you know, creating your, we're working on that in Florida. I was talking to David Jones yesterday of the Santa Rosa Volunteers, you know, so we're working together. He's got the people, the emailers, the protesters, the sign carriers, you know, the letter writers, the phone callers. He's got all those folks, you know, so we're going to see what we can do about creating an illegal alien free zone here in Santa Rosa County, Florida, including checking on the registration of illegal alien, you know, students in the schools. So we're hoping to make this a model for freedom. It's going to be really interesting because we want to challenge, you know, all the forces that be. I got a question for you, Pianki and Jonathan. But Pianki, why don't you finish at this point, and then I've got another issue for you.
Thank you. Yeah, and you know, here's another thing. All states don't mm-hmm. have the ability to seize your assets. So that's something they need to work
on
and look at.
Well, they certainly did it during the 80s during the cocaine wars and the crack wars. They were seizing assets all the time. Yeah, and local sheriffs.
Well, yeah, remember Elliot Ness? Isn't that what he was doing?
Elliot Ness? You mean Sonny Crockett? I think we're missing our TV shows here.
Elliot Ness with, what was it, the Untouchables?
Yeah.
He went after the bootleggers?
Vice. Yeah, well, I've seen more Miami Vice when they went after the cocaine dealers. Jonathan, you want to get in on this? Wait, what's your favorite TV show? Legal one. Sorry.
Why?
I'm kind of losing it here. All right. Let me switch things over a little bit. I'm going to go to Pianki first about this. So this white judge orders this black guy in Ohio to take a vaccine as a condition of his employment. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. Don't we remember the Tuskegee experiment? Don't we remember the Nuremberg codes? Don't we remember anything? They're forcing this guy to take a vaccine as a condition of freedom? What's going on here? Pianki, you first, and then I want to get to Jonathan. You hear about this case?
Well, yes, another one of those cases, like you have the governor in Louisiana, Bill Edward, is vetoed a constitutional carry with a state that's 32-33% black. It sounds like you don't want blacks to be able to carry a gun. So it's the same thing one can associate with.
Yeah, where's the ACLU? Where's Black Lives Matter? You got a guy here, you know, black guy who's being forced to take a vaccine against his will as a condition of probation. Jonathan, this is your ballpark. You're the criminal defense attorney. What the hell is going on here?
Well, and it is sort of a tangent to the, you know, his office. It's a condition of his sentence, of his probation. So it's a little bit odd. But it is, I think it does come out as being a violation of the 13th Amendment. Because
you mean it's a criminal probation, Jonathan?
Yes.
Oh,
he was charged with a minor, but he did say he's not going to get vaccinated.
Right.
Which means that assuming he gets a good lawyer who's not a weenie, as I like to put, you know, for family radio, there will be a, you know, this will set up a lawsuit, assuming he can find a legal organization that is not bankrupting him or can fund it somehow. This will become it's not going to end with this news story. It's going to go on. And I believe, like I say, in Virginia, there's a case from the Virginia Supreme Court based on the federal constitution saying that when someone was sentenced from a criminal conviction and ordered to pay fines, but then there's also something called court costs, which for some strange reason are not considered part of the fine, but if you're found guilty, you're charged with the costs, you know, some minor costs of the case, not a realistic part of it. And so he did not pay the court costs, and they imprisoned him. And the Virginia Supreme Court, now remember the history of Virginia, said that this was a violation of the 13th Amendment because it constituted involuntary servitude. To imprison him for the purpose of getting him to pay a civil debt was equivalent to slavery. It violated. And I would say that a condition that says someone must get a vaccine, there's no statutory authorization for that. There's nothing saying that a judge can impose the following conditions on a plea deal or probation.
That sounds like systemic racism to me, Jonathan.
And they didn't say black guy in the article. That's the other front part. They never said that he was a black guy. I only noticed it because I saw his picture. Then I saw the picture of the smiling white judge. I thought, wait a minute. This is a little inconsistent here. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jonathan.
Depends on where you look. But yeah, no, it's a black guy. And if, you know, if the shoe was on the other foot in terms of politics, there would be, you know, they'd be burning down the neighborhood and helping themselves to flat screen TVs. But you know, it would be an outrage. It would be on all of the CNN all day, every hour. Because you know, again, the issue would be we're supposed to be sensitive to our past and the Tuskegee experiment. I keep getting it's the Tuskegee. But which one
Tuskegee,
is the,
that's
which
right?
One is
yes.
The airplanes were the Tuskegee Airmen. Those are the first black pilots in World War II. I actually met one who was an instructor out at Oakland Airport when I was there back in the late 80s. So it's, yeah. I'm sorry.
Let me say something on this. Where is the NAACP? I'm going to get that story, and I'm going to send a certified letter carrying the story and the question to the NAACP. Maybe Benjamin Crump needs to get a letter. He's the lawyer of record on so many of these police shooting cases. So is this not a similar egregious of a black person's civil rights?
I think so, because again, we are told that the echoes of history are so insensitive and inflammatory that something that just sounds like something, you know, in like with I try to use examples that are to the side just because I'm trying to illustrate the point. I'm not trying to downplay the main point you're making, but for example, people, you know somebody will use a certain gesture, therefore they're Hitler or something like that, and so the Tuskegee experiments should be so traumatic and such a scandal, and it's not like there's any excuse for it. There's like no, you know, in some of these issues, it's a mixed bag. I mean, it's not, and so it so much sounds like that that just the similarity is supposed to offend us and wound us and injure us in any other context. I think they would be all over this, you know, the racial insensitivity of it, if nothing else.
Well, except that the business of the Democrat insurrection in the White House and the CDC under Dr. Fascist is selling vaccines. So this is they're thrilled with this. They're not going to, they don't care that, I mean, you know, black Americans are used for the purposes of political power, not because they're black Americans. You know, it's a race thing that is used in a horrible way. And the reason I think that the NAACP is not in this is simply because they approve of the vaccines. They approve of the Democrat Party. They approve of the CDC. They approve of everything that's going on, you know, including the threats of the green zone, you know, leprosy colonies that the CDC was proposing last year that I talked about at the beginning of the show. I want to get on those, too, in just a second. Then I want to cover also, before Claire gets here, for mandatory vaccinations at work. So, gentlemen, if you're ready, I want to try something else. What do you think? And Pianchi, I sent you the article. It's in your Facebook Messenger.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. All right. So, CDC internment. Jonathan, do you want to go ahead and then I want to try this issue?
Well, are you asking? Was that a question or a comment?
Not yet.
I'm not sure.
It's going to be a question, but I want to make sure we've covered this to the extent that you want to cover it. Do you have any more to say on forced vaccination in terms of probation?
We could always go on for hours, but I think my answer is going to be the same for employers. But
okay,
you know. But go ahead, because we'll never finish interviews.
No, I know. That's the fascinating thing about law is it's never completely settled, despite what the Supreme Court says. I also think Texas is going to have about as much luck in the Supreme Court with this as they did with their election case. I don't know if the Supreme Court's even going to hear it, just because of what's going on up there. All right, so the CDC released this document last July 20th. Natural News has been all over it. You know, a bunch of folks have Josie brought it to my attention. I actually found it, too, from another person. And so what it is these interim guidelines. Let me just pull them up here real quick. I'm not going to go over the whole thing, but just in case anybody else wants to look it up, interim operational considerations for implementing the shielding approach to prevent COVID-19 infections in humanitarian settings. And this is CDC, July 26. It's right there. Anybody can find it. And what it basically, let me see the outlines here. The shielding approach aims to reduce the number of COVID-19 cases by limiting contact between individuals at higher risk, you know, of developing severe disease. In other words, those who get on ventilators and unfortunately lose their lives, and the general population, which is low risk, they say. High-risk individuals would be temporarily relocated to safe or, quote, green zones established at the household, neighborhood, camp, as one of those buzzwords, camp, sector, or community level, depending on the context and setting. They would have minimal contact with family members and other low-risk residents. So in other words, it's like a leper colony. So they want to divide those with COVID, you know, into these camps until they're at low risk, and then they want to, you know, and then the low risk people, I guess they're supposedly all going to be vaccinated. I don't know what's going to happen, but the whole point is, a lot of folks are panicking over this, and as I explained earlier in the show, I believe this is more a threat than a reality. I really think they're doing this, you know, to scare the hell out of people once again, to push even more people into vaccines, thinking I don't want to end up in a COVID camp. But that's what the CDC proposed last year. And the reason I don't think it's as serious is because it came out last year and there was no reaction to it last year. So it seems to be coming out this year. So I'm wondering if the CDC didn't put this out there so that people would panic again, even though they have no intention of making these camps. But then again, they might. So I don't know. Yeah. Jonathan?
Well, I mean, Craig, the last year, of course, Trump was president until January 20th. So the fact that it happened now is it's distinctly possible. Jerome Bell. I'm doing some help for congressional candidate Jerome Bell in Virginia, and there's some. But he's a 27-year veteran, retired of the Navy, and chief petty officer. And he's he's hearing that first of all, a great many military may resign rather than get vaccinated, and he's also here. We're also hearing some warnings that the military may, or at least National Guard, may be used in federal lockdowns, that there is noise that they're trying to renew lockdowns in a way that is much more serious than what we experienced before, which makes no sense. Now, Joan Bell specifically, in some interviews, is pointing out, how are they testing for the Delta variant? Remember, they had so much trouble developing any tests.
They're not.
For COVID in general. You know, where is this test that they magically can test the Delta variant when they barely could test any COVID at all for months and months and months, and now suddenly they're testing, there's this concern. But the noise level is certainly very high and getting higher that they are going to do things based on this Delta variant that they never did before. So it is getting, considering the people who are in charge now, it's who knows? I don't know.
Well, we don't even know if there is a Delta variant because this is all based on fear. Again, the CDC is a business. The FDA is a business. The NIH is a business. The NIH issues grants to universities and companies with our money so they can develop products that the CDC owns patents to, and the NIH does as well. Dr. Fauci has over 1,000 patents, I hear. Okay, and so this entity, government corporate university cabal, combined with the World Health Organization in China to put all this together. But here, this is a business, and so they're trying to sell this in any way possible. The Delta variants we know are caused by vaccinated people who are vaccinated for the original SARS-CoV strain, SARS-CoV-2, that doesn't exist anymore. And that comes direct from Peter McCullough, who's the foremost authority on this right now. Okay, so, and in fact, Judy Mikovits was on the show talking about the same thing. And so have other doctors. I've got a string of doctors and videos that are all saying that the vaccines are very specific, and mRNA, messenger RNA vaccines, are the most specific of all to a particular strain of a disease, and the viruses can mutate in as short as 10 hours into something else. Well, within 24 hours, you could have a totally new, virus within you going around a vaccine that's so specific it can't handle it, but your natural immunity can. That's why people with natural immunity aren't coming down with these variants. The vaccinated are actually creating the variants through antibody-dependent enhancement. And that makes perfect sense if you're perpetuating the business. This is a business. You know, the whole, all these folks are in this to create more markets. This is why one shot, then a booster shot, then another shot, then a variant shot. We got the gamma shot. You need that one too. You need the Delta shot. The PCR test has been taken off the market because it can't even tell the difference between flu and COVID. So this is all
right.
Fear. This is marketing. This is a marketing campaign.
Right.
That's the problem.
And you know that I think it was Pfizer reported like $34 billion in,
oh, huge,
in profits.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the CEO of Pfizer won't even take his own vaccine. That's why he couldn't travel to Israel. That was reported back. Jerusalem Post reported that. Nobody else picked it up. That, to me, should be worldwide news. But no, the head of Pfizer would not take his own vaccine. I don't know if he's still taking it. This is an exciting day. Let me bring Claire into the maelstrom that we've created here. And I don't know what's going on internationally. We'll find out. But I think there's so much domestically that we can cover that affects internationally. I'm going to ask you about the Nuremberg Code at some point and things like that. But Claire, welcome to the show, Claire Lopez. And do you have any comments so far, or do you want to hold off until international stuff, or where would you like to go?
Oh, well, good morning, and good to be with you guys, Greg and Jonathan. Yeah, I've been listening to you for a while. Honestly, most of what is, you know, top of the news heap these days is domestic, so maybe
right.
We stick with that, huh?
No, fine with me. But this is, you know, I don't know if people look at it the same way I do. Well, Claire, let me ask you this about it, because you'd be a good person on this, because you know what's happened in other countries with gulags and with internments. And it seems to me that the CDC document, this interim guideline to put COVID victims in green zones, you know, and isolate them from the population, strikes me very much as a combination between biblical leper colonies and internment camps like the Japanese American were interned, you know, by Roosevelt. And what the biggest problem I have with that is the fact that the CDC knows the cures. They know how to stop. They could have stopped this before it began, but they don't because they're a business. And this is the part that I think people are really missing. I don't see them making internment camps. I see them talking about it so people are scared into the vaccine, because that's what this all roads lead to vaccines. The one thing the CDC, the NIH, the FDA have done is blocked cures like hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin. Ivermectin is apparently very popular in Europe right now. It's working extremely well. So, Claire, do you see any parallels? Do you see where the CDC would use the fear of a camp, or do you think they actually want to create one to separate people? How do you look at, especially compared with other countries have done? How do you see this?
Well, I mean, I think that you know, their makeup is totalitarian. I mean, it is Bolshevik.
The CDC?
They would do it if they could. If they could get away with it, they would do it. I
okay.
don't think they can, and I don't think they will. But I think you may be very well right about. You know, scaring people into going and you know, getting more vaccine, make more money for Pfizer and J&J and all the rest.
Mm-hmm. And then here's, we still got to get the money trail. Jonathan, I don't know if you can help me with this in terms of the of tracing the money, because we know that Dr. Fauci, who we affectionately call Dr. Fauci around here, has 1,000 patents plus. Okay, I'd love to see him audited. I think it would be fascinating to find out how many offshore accounts he has, how many billions he has from all the royalties, all the license fees, all the things. And this all comes from the Bayh-Dole Act. That's Bayh-Dole. Two senators who back in the 80s said that government workers could patent and make money off the work they do for the government, instead of like a corporation where, you know,
mm-hmm.
if you come up with an invention, you know, the corporation owns it because they paid you the salary to come up with the invention. That's your job. But the government's different. Claire, you mm-hmmed me. So do you have more on this? What do you think?
No, not more, but I'm agreeing. I'm sort of nodding along here in agreement with you.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're talking.
Yeah. Well, we've got a crowded field. We've got Pianchi, we've got Jonathan, we've got Claire, and any of you are free to jump into this. But I really, as I look at it, and I know people that, you know, Josie brought this to my attention, and a lot of folks, I read Natural News, and there's a lot of people that are really scared of these camps. But as I look at it, as I look at the CDC as a business model, as a fascist, you know, government corporate entity, as part of that cabal between the vaccine manufacturers, which have no liability, by the way, for anything they do, and this, it wouldn't make the extra effort putting into a camp and the problems that would cause, especially with the rise in militia groups that would happen again, just like happened with the Bundy Ranch, you know, when people said, no, BLM, you can't do this. That I think that would be the excuse that would be all that would be necessary for the people that want to take up guns to do it. Now, I don't want to go there. I think there's a much easier way to do that, and that's, of course, cure the disease, which is the one thing they don't do. It's like cancer. You know, why don't we have a cure of cancer after the billions of dollars are being spent? Well, because there's probably too much money in treatment. You know, in the same way, COVID is a business. It would have died out naturally if we'd done nothing July last year. I mean, that's what the CDC figures were showing. The death counts were dropping precipitously at about a 45-degree angle from April 15th to July, and then all of a sudden they changed the numbers, they changed everything, the lockdowns came in, and here we are.
Well, I mean, you know, from the beginning, the numbers were all fake. So I don't think we can even cite any numbers coming out of CDC because, as we know, and as they posted at their own website last fall, they overestimated the number of cases by like 94%, and only 6%. And again, here's something else. The difference in the definition between a case, which just means one of these pumped-up artificial, you know, test results that aren't even accurate, and hospitalizations and or deaths, those are the real figures. That's what we really want to know about. And, you know, this virus probably will never die out. It's viruses don't do that. They linger. They skulk about the fringes of societies. They pop back up again every now and then, just like the flu, the various flu strains. I mean, it's going to be with us. That's just the way viruses are. But, yeah, we've got treatments for them, and people don't want to use them.
Well, and that's the thing, too. In fact, I just got my own because I'm more concerned with people who are vaccinated shedding spike proteins than I was ever concerned about the virus itself because I think I had it. You know, back, if you remember my show, the end of December, January, beginning of January 2020, you know, I sounded horrible. And I'm convinced that was COVID. And the fact that I've never been sick since, I've never worn a mask. I've been out there, you know, windows open driving, you know, in amongst people. I've never sheltered myself from anybody. I've been around people who've had COVID, you know, for a year and a half now, never picked it up again. So as far as I'm concerned, I'm fine. I've got the immunity. So I don't worry about it. What I worry about are the spike proteins that are coming off people that are shedding it who've been vaccinated. And if you'll notice, and this is something for all of you, I want to get to John Pianchi and Claire on this, that the rise in, you know, alleged infection seems to be directly correlated with the rise in the amount of people who are vaccinated. In other words, we were doing fine before the vaccination. This thing was ending again. And yet all of a sudden, you know, which gives rise to the theory that the vaccinated are creating the variations because the vaccines are for one specific strain and the virus mutates in them and then spreads to other people. That's what I think is going on.
Well,
the vaccine
I mean,
there's
a natural effect, natural selection, survival of the fittest, all of that. When you introduce a vaccine in the middle of a pandemic, the worst idea that ever was, you almost guarantee that the what they call escape mutants. I've seen that phrase. I think it's apt.
Okay.
It's perfect.
That's a new one.
Escape mutants,
you know,
will be
mutations
that manage to get around the vaccine simply by the course of natural selection. And they're the ones that will survive and propagate.
And they don't do it in unvaccinated or what I call normal people because our natural immune system adapts to the new variants before they get anywhere. You know, the variants never appeared until people started getting vaccinated, which I find fascinating. No one seems to be pointing that out either. Pianchi, you had a comment. Why don't you go ahead?
Well, the Democrats is going to ride this horse all the way to the barn. And I have a question for all of us.
Dude, no, I want to hear more about that. That's a great metaphor. Pianchi has the best metaphors in the world. So explain that. Where do you think they want to take this? I think you're right.
They're going to use it. They're going to ride it as long as they possibly can, as far out into the future as they possibly can. Another thing, of us here on this call, has anybody tried to fly nationally to see if we're on a no-fly list for putting out information like this?
I haven't tried. I haven't had any place that I need to go. But I'm hoping to do some conventions, you know, fairly soon next year as the show grows and we get a need to do that. I don't know. Jonathan, Claire, have you guys flown anywhere lately?
Well, I think who's the Louisiana senator? I think maybe we're grooming Pianchi to be to rival. He's always got this is a great statement.
Pianchi, have you thought of running for office? That's actually a good idea. I'm sorry, Jonathan. Go ahead.
Well, I think people need to start a long time before start preparing. But there's a mistake to jump in right away, unless there's no choice. But anyway, so I don't know, but I do think that we're looking at the midterm election variant of COVID-19.
That's perfect.
I can't take credit for that, but I
it's right on.
Some people saying that's going on.
Well, you know, Claire said something really important I want to kind of focus on before. Again, that the whole idea of a vaccine is something you get as a preventive to build up immunity before the pandemic hits. The idea that people that they're pushing these vaccines out after, as far as I'm concerned, the pandemic was already over, you know, is makes it a business model and not a health health preventive. Claire, when you travel overseas for the CIA, I'm sure they gave you tons of vaccines for the place that were tailored for the places you were going. Correct?
Sure, all kinds of things: yellow fever and West Nile, and I don't know what all. Yeah, Africa.
That makes sense. But you got to – now, how soon before your trip were you given these? How much time were you given to build up immunities?
I don't remember exactly, but at least a matter of weeks.
Okay. Well, it's going to take a couple of weeks to build these up. So, no, it's a short-term thing. But you knew the areas you're going to. You knew the diseases that were prevalent there. You knew the things that you probably wouldn't be exposed to here, so you wouldn't have the immunity.
We were taking quinine against malaria and all
okay.
of that, sure.
Right. Quinine's for malaria, right?
I never got sick.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is why I'm not against vaccines. I'm against bad vaccines. I think this was a bad one.
Or unnecessary. That's the thing. And again, I mean, the pandemic is not over now, never was, and never will be. It's going to continue. It is going to, as I said, lurk around the edges of our societies for the foreseeable future.
Well,
it's
when I
just
say pandemic,
what a virus does.
Yeah, I'm not saying
and
the virus is going to be eliminated.
And it now and then, just
yeah.
like flu in different seasons. But that's normal.
Well, see, and that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that when I say a pandemic, I mean the panic, the emergency conditions that are so severe you need a declaration of emergency to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a flu pandemic. At least, you know, we have a flu season. Okay, so the flu never goes away. It just comes back in different forms. Colds are the same thing. And another point you made that's really important is cases. Okay, we went from deaths to cases to actually infections. Well, how many cases of the flu are in this country right now? I don't know, 20, 30 million?
Well, I mean, but they erased all the numbers. All the flu numbers just turned into COVID numbers. And
yeah.
so if you look at the stats, it looks like there is no flu. Well, it is flu. It's just being recorded as SARS-CoV-2, that's all.
Yeah. So, Jonathan, do you know the legal definition of a pandemic?
No, I don't think so. I don't
the
think
WHO has a definition. It means it's global, it's worldwide, it has high infection and very high lethality, high death rate.
I'm sure that Bianchi is thinking it. So we're talking about you're describing a panic-demic.
Well, unfortunately, I haven't experienced everything.
No, but what Greg was describing is more of a panic-demic than it is a pandemic.
Yeah.
Right. They're saying, well, you need to get John Cullen, C-U-L-L-E-N, on here. And
okay.
frankly, you know, then you can expect to have, you know, men in black, what do they call it? Men in black show up at your door because he's like saying that.
I've invited the NSA. I invited the FBI. I've invited the Chinese Communist Party. You know, if you folks want to join us, just call us like everybody else, 215-383-3832. I'll put you on the show. It's not a problem. You know, guys, don't just silently buy there. Maybe they'll do the live chat. What's that?
Right. If they're going to listen, they may as well participate.
You might as well join us. It's not like we're hiding anything here. You know, we're completely open. Although I do find it curious that both China and Taiwan dropped off my international map at the same time about a month ago. That's really curious because we actually got a call from Beijing in our early days. It was a student who was, you know, if it's a real call, it was a Chinese student who was in the United States, went through our universities, spoke really good English, went back to China, and he was arguing against gun control. It's kind of funny. He says, "You got too many guns here." I said, "You got a totalitarian government." You know, oh, okay, yeah. So it was one of those kind of conversations. It was really fascinating. But I only ever got that one call from China. Yeah. All right. I want to talk, because we're sort of on the
next funny issue. Thing, you
Go
mentioned
ahead,
guns. Again.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I was on a site looking at some guns yesterday,
uh-huh.
and practically every one was out of stock, unavailable right now. So Americans must be buying them up by the
dozen. We're buying up guns like crazy. Do you know who's buying? And liberals are buying up guns. I mean, everybody's buying up guns. It is the most fascinating thing that's going on right now, which is good because gun owners are gun voters, and gun voters are usually interested in freedom. And so this is an amazing thing. Well, this goes to what Claire was saying earlier when we talk about the school boards changing and the people are changing. And so what are you hearing out there wherever you are in terms of change? Because we got big things going on right here in Santa Rosa County. We're going to see if we can create an illegal alien free zone here in our county. And so, Claire, what's the vibe out there from the people you talk to? What kind of changes are coming? Just in attitudes.
Well, I'm in Northern Virginia, so I think that's a very short discussion.
You got problems. Hey, has anybody watched the symposium with Mike Lindell?
Oh, good grief, yes. Yeah.
Okay, good grief, why? What's you're the one?
It's a disaster. It's a complete collapse. Collapse, yeah.
Tell me why.
We tried so hard. Because the symposium was billed as an expose with evidence of how China hacked our elections.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, China did not hack our elections. There's no such thing. They did no such thing. We tried to warn them ahead of time. Yesterday, stories are coming out. Mike Lindell's top cybersecurity guy is quoted in the Washington Times last night, saying, quote, to the newspaper, to the reporter, that there's no way to prove that China hacked our elections. That's Mike Lindell's top cybersecurity guy.
When you say we tried to warn them, who's we and how did you try and warn them?
Well, there's so many people who realized that he was going off the deep end.
Okay.
And tried to get to him before the symposium. Please, please, Mike, please listen. Please listen to us. You're headed for a disaster, and now it's happened.
Okay. Yeah, from what I've seen watching, I want to talk about Dr. Shebev in a bit because he made a fascinating revelation, which I talked about a little bit earlier in the show. But I've never, you know, as far as China hacking, you know, there's so much evidence. You know, when I talk about I've never talked about China hacking our election because, you know, A, I can't prove it. And as Claire says, you know, it didn't happen. I don't see why they would have to. They've infiltrated us in so many other areas. They're stealing our technology. They've got the universities. They've got spies all over the place. They've got, you know, Eric Swalwell sleeping with Feng Feng. You know, you've got all – why would they have to – you know, why would they have to steal the election? I mean, the Democrats wanted to do that anyway. And they've been stealing, you know, I still think the 2018 election was a stolen election. I don't believe the House went Democrat because there's too many elections, you know, of congressional members, especially in California, that were going Republican. They stopped counting. And the next morning, the Democrats won, just like the Biden insurrection. So to me, what's important is the election audits. I mean, there's so much cheating in ballots coming out from under desks and ballots being recounted and blocked, you know, things that happened and Dominion voting machines and everything else that's going on with them of programmable, you know, stuff that's happening with that, that China is, you know, is really irrelevant to the discussion because
right.
There's so much
cheating
going on. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Claire.
I mean, if you go all the way back to the early part of this year, meaning January, February, when the various states were holding those legislative hearings in Arizona, Michigan, who else did it? Pennsylvania, Georgia.
Uh-huh.
And they brought so many witnesses and sworn affidavits during their hearings, including, for example, Dr. Shiva. The evidence was presented then and again now at the symposium. There was all kinds of cheating and fraud going on, just not China hacking, that's all. And that
do you
was
think
the
Mike
main
has
billing.
An obsession? Do you think Mike Lindell has kind of an obsession with China, and there's something that he's in other words, he's formed his conclusion.
He was misled, and he believed people who told him things. We were concerned that by muddying the waters with inaccurate information, that fake information could taint the whole, including things like the Arizona audit, for example.
Okay.
You can't believe a thing they say. Look at that. Oh, forget Arizona. That's all. They're all the same. That was the concern, yeah. that if they were allowed to insert misleading, counterfactual information, that the whole would be tainted. The election integrity effort would suffer you know, it would be discredited, along with, of course, Mike Lindell himself.
Would this be a deep state psychological operation of those that both the Republican and Democrat establishment to provide misinformation like they would any other country to provide misinformation to direct an outcome? Claire, and then we'll get to Jonathan. Interesting. Okay, Jonathan.
Yeah, of course. I feel bad taking up too much of.
No. We're open here. We're open discussion.
We'll have to clear the whole hour sometime to, especially when there's a lot of things. But I think that there's a lot of people, including Mike Lindell, has been way too obsessed with these machines. But we just had a decision yesterday, and maybe, and I'll just mention it briefly. Maybe I'll analyze it next week or whatever. Where, as I said in my time, every step in the analysis would have been decided the other way, if it helped the liberals and the big state and the big government. So every element of the analysis is a completely inconsistent view. I have had to defend Larry Klayman's defamation lawsuits, and so we've been up against the best law firms out there trying to dismiss our defamation lawsuits. So I know all these steps intimately because we get hit with them. And the judge just on the thing just completely, I mean, every allegation that the judge in yesterday's order about the Dominion machines said could have an innocent explanation, primarily that Dominion did not do it. Dominion had if I go out and I hit, a school bus full of nuns with my car, I did it, not Dodge. And so every statement that all these people said, can be interpreted and should have been interpreted as, and should have been said more clearly, as somebody used these machines wrongly. That doesn't mean that the CEO of Dominion was sitting there changing votes from his corner office.
Right.
And so the distinction between whether Dominion stole the election or someone, for example, if I write a plan for a terrorist attack on a Microsoft Word, software, that doesn't mean Bill Gates is responsible. But that's some of the. But they've been way too obsessed with these machines, instead of the Action Radio with others filed a brief. I thought the clean, simple thing that the Constitution gives the legislature the sole role to set the rules, and the rules were clearly changed. Bam, boom, end of discussion is the way it should have been from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I'm just appalled that nobody learned anything from the 2000 election. So anyway, everybody wanted to jump into all these, as Claire described it, these maybes. And of course, our enemies are always going to seize on the weakest thing you say. They're never going to lead with your strong point. They're going to pretend your strong points don't exist and go after the weakest thing you say.
Well, as far as the machine goes, I've heard for years, ever since I think it was Pat Buchanan's primary in Arizona, that machines are changing votes. You put in one vote and you get your receipt and it's a different vote. I've never liked the idea of machines at all. Optical scanners maybe and decent counting and tracking the counting, but the machines themselves, that seems to be where the precincts are having the most problems.
Dominion machines is that they, according to the owner's manuals themselves, those machines were pre-programmed to cheat. I mean, they were set up in the code to cheat. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Right, but machines don't do anything. It's like Rush used to laugh about, news headlines saying SUV, runs into school bus. The SUV didn't do anything, didn't go around. The machines don't cheat. Somebody cheats using the machine.
Right.
Well, yes, but there are also Dominion representatives present at voting locations where they had no business being through the night of the 3rd and the 4th of November.
They also had passwords, too. Didn't Dominion kept their own passwords to their machines, too?
Yeah.
So this is where the problem is. And Dominion, I think they're Canadian. Originally it was just my people, God, but it's fascinating that, if Mike's going off on this China thing, like I say, China's doing well enough without having to steal. They already bought Biden, so that's, they can't do much better than that. And then working with the Democrats to put him in, You know, I mean, for whatever they did. But, you know, the actual election itself, the machines, the cheating, the multiple ballots, the counting irregularities, the just changing the numbers, the different weighting that the machines do. In other words, you know, Trump got half a vote and Biden got a vote and a half. You know, all these different things that went on. That's the election. That's the election correction. That's what has to happen. And I don't believe, if we don't get this fixed by the 2022 midterms, that there's going to be a legitimate 2022 election. And the test is going to be California, because California's got an election this year, and it's going to be mostly mail-in, and it's going to be on the recall of Gavin Newsom. Anybody else see that as a test?
Yes. It's the same proverbial horse. They're going to ride it all the way to the barn as long as they possibly can.
Interesting. Claire, is this something we should be covering internationally? Do you see parallels with any other country? Or who has a good election? Who would provide us a good model of a secure election system? Who's doing it right?
Well, I mean, I think European countries have done a good job. I think, you know, they have different systems than we do and all, but you never hear of these kinds of scandals coming out of, you know, Belgium, France, Spain, Germany, ever.
Are they using machines? Are they using optical scanners? Are they counting it by hand? How are they doing it?
I don't know.
Okay.
Well, you know, here in the United States, as the Constitution provides it, the only way you're going to have those clean, transparent, and legal ballots is the separation of federal from state and local ballots.
Yep. Now, that's Pianki's bill, and it's out there. You know, we need to do more with it. You know, I've been lax myself in getting that out there, but I think it's a great idea if we could separate that so that so the states would still have control over the federal ballots, though, right? Because states do control.
No, they would not. So, they wouldn't have control over the federal ballots. The people that's carrying the election out that has been bonded and all the other precautions made with the federal ballot, well, they would control the federal ballot. Because you never would get 50 states to agree. It's always going to be these discrepancies. It's always going to be these possibilities.
Yeah, but I don't mind.
So let them have it.
You know, but in other words, would your bill not allow, say, like state Arizona, the state legislature of Arizona, to audit Maricopa County? Because that would the federal portion of it. Because that might, I think that would
my concern. My concern is the for the president, vice president, the U.S. senator, and the Congress people, is that they be separated from all other ballot concerns going on in the state and local, and that the people that's able to cast those ballots has been properly vetted, similar to your U.S. passport and any other means.
Yeah, I have to read that again because I'm not sure that now that I think about it, I still want the states to be able to have jurisdiction just like the states have their electors and Arizona's thinking of recalling their electors, you know, if that audit comes out the way we all think it's going to, you know, so I don't know if I want to relinquish that kind of control by over the federal government because that's the whole point of what the Democrat bills are doing. They're trying to institutionalize cheating. And if they get jurisdiction over that, then the states have nowhere to go. That's my concern.
Well, you can always hand those legal ballots to the state legislature, as long as you got a copy and know what you're handing them.
Okay. I want to raise something different that nobody's really talked about. I think it's kind of unfortunate. Because my car was in the shop getting a new engine, I was able to watch the Olympics. And I loved the Olympics. And it's a fascinating thing to me, the politics of the Olympics, you know, where they were Carter kept us out of them in 1980 because of Afghanistan with the Russians and there was something else, you know, various times and horrible things have happened. And in 1972 when the Palestinians killed the Israeli athletes, you know, I think it was Rafer Johnson did the, you know, raised his fist as a black power salute. I think the 1964 Olympics. So the Olympics have always been interesting. This one seemed particularly, you know, devoid of politics, except for the fact that everybody's wearing a mask, which I thought was stupid because you got the healthiest people in the world. You know, and there were no spectators, which is stupid because you've got, you know, the healthiest people in the world. And, you know, it's just none of this made sense to me. But the idea that we're all getting together and we, you know, Chinese athletes or communist athletes are next to free athletes and, you know, and all these things are happening. It seemed pretty cool. But let's put it to the group. Did anybody see it? Anybody see the value of the Olympics still? I think they're valuable. just because I like the competition. It's the only sports I really watch. Claire, what do you think?
I totally agree with you. I think they're valuable. I think they're fun. I think they're wonderful occasions for, national teams to show their very best. But not if they're going to wreck it like they have lately.
Well, they stopped it for a year because of COVID. I mean, the whole world shut down, which is, we've talked about that before. But the Olympics themselves, I think, are incredibly valuable because you see people you don't normally see. You know, I forgot, Bermuda, I think, won their first gold medal in something. And it's like, wow. And all these nations are there. There's some other nations. I think Brazil got their first medal in gymnastics. You know, so I think it was a bronze. But they're, you know, it's not always the biggest nations. It's really, Pianki, what do you think? I'm curious.
Well, let me tell you this. You got factions in this country, black factions, that hated to see those Olympic track and field, when they received their gold medal, to wrap themselves in the American flag.
Oh,
they
hated. Now we're onto something. Tell me why.
They hated.
I want to explore this. Yeah.
They hated to hear the one young black wrestler, female wrestler, how she went off in a holy tangent about how grateful she is to represent the United States. How they hated the young Sudanese lady who said how grateful she was to represent the United States and wrapping themselves in the American flag. They hate to see that. That's why you don't hear them talking about it.
Claire?
I was thrilled to see the winners. I mean, you know, track and field or whichever, celebrating, you know, their country, America. That to me is thrilling. That anybody could possibly find something objectionable in that is just beyond my understanding.
Look at the news coverage, Chair.
You remember early on you had the one black female who was the hammer thrower? And
she came
in third place, and how she was, it was all over the news how she said she felt as if she was, ambushed when she got up on the podium, and she had to listen to the national anthem. And funny thing about that, somebody went back in history where they showed her in an awards winning, and she was wrapped in the American flag.
Times have changed, huh?
Yes, and
that's
not only that, you look at how the news carry this or don't carry it. Just like you made mention of this man who is being forced by a judge to take the COVID vaccine. They didn't mention his color or his skin in the story until
I saw the picture. That's the only reason I knew it. And I know the race.
When they don't mention the color of skin, you can just about guarantee it's a black person.
That's like Lieutenant Michael Byrd, the one that killed Ashley Babbitt. You never hear. You were the one that pointed out to me until I saw his pictures, he's black. You know, and you said, yeah, they point that out. That's fascinating. So the real question, I want to get Jonathan in this too, because we've got about 12 minutes left. But what is so interesting to me is the real war in this country is that I've heard black speakers talk about themselves as when they talk about my people. Now my people are Americans, okay, but her people were black. Pianki, what the hell is going on here? Are there like two black American types, or there's Americans who are black and consider themselves black as my people, and there are black Americans who consider themselves Americans as my people. Is it that sharp a divide?
Yes, it is. And what you got a voice that's been going on for a long time that has been trying to carve out mischievously this separate nation, one black and the rest white. And they would claim anything that is not Lily White. Just like Brianna. Brianna has become a billionaire through her efforts and hard work. And they claim her as an African-American. Brianna is a Barbados. She wasn't born in the United States. She's a Barbados. Like the tennis star, the Japanese tennis star, her skin is not Lily White. They want to claim her as being black.
Claire? Yeah.
Well, I don't even know what to say.
Yeah, this is fascinating.
That's the tactics and weapons that they use. If you don't fight fire with fire, you're going to get burnt every time.
So what the Olympics has done then, and this is fascinating. This is why I love talking to all of you, because the things that we get to, that we analyze, the things that individually each one of us, you know, would hit upon, but each person contributing a thought, it's like, wait a minute, we need to go there. We need to figure this out a little bit. But the Olympics has really exposed black racism against other black Americans.
Well, I've talked about there for a long time.
Yeah, but
sometimes
you have to see it. You know, sometimes you really have to see it, because we talk about things all the time, but until you actually see it, you know, it's like the Olympics. You know, I was like, oh, the Olympics come around again. You know, it's like, well, it'd be kind of fun to watch. You know, then I watch it, and I miss the opening ceremonies. But there have been some incredible performances, and you got people that mm-hmm. had to miss a year, and there they are doing their best. They don't care about politics. They don't care about. In fact, the gymnasts, they're, you know, for all the different countries, they're all buds because they know what they've been through. It's like soldiers, you know, on opposite sides of a war that have more in common with, you know, their enemy soldiers than they did with the people back home because they fought the war. It's the same thing, I think, with the Olympics. You get sort of a camaraderie of athletes. They don't care about the politics. They don't care about all this other nonsense. I'm just sorry they had to wear masks. You know,
well, I can't say that they don't care, because okay. what you've seen with the kneeling and what you've seen with the information that's on the uniform, information that's plastered on the floor, information that plastered on the walls about Black Lives Matter and so forth. Yes, you have
the
forces that are starting to affect them.
I didn't see that at the Olympics, though. You said that. I mean,
oh,
I'm
no,
sure
you,
that's here.
Well, Olympus put out a notice that they wasn't going to tolerate that type of behavior.
Yep. Good for them. But this is fascinating. I think the American women's soccer team. You know, the current thought is that nobody cares that they lost. In fact, most Americans are glad they lost because it's so disrespectful of our country.
And disrespectful of the flag.
And that's horrible to see. You know, you want to cheer your team. You want to be proud of them. But when they're not proud of our country, then they shouldn't even be there. I mean, anybody who ever, ever, ever takes a knee at the national anthem should be booted from the team on the spot immediately.
Yep.
That's my thought about that.
And now they plan to lift their voice and sing at these events as if it's the black national anthem. I would never.
What's going on with
to
that?
See if I wanted that.
Where did that come from? I've heard about this. I think I read the lyrics. I was disgusted. But the idea of a black national anthem is completely, you know, anathema to an American nation. You know, a nation has a national anthem. The national anthem unifies the nation. It's expression of that nation. Every, you know, from the French Marseillaise, you know, British God Save the Queen to O Canada to the Star Spangled Banner. You know, these are expressions of our nation. You can't have a nation if you have multiple national anthems, which goes back to my contention before that there's a certain percentage of black Americans that consider themselves black above everything else, and that is a huge problem. Where did this black national anthem come from, Pianchi? Because this is new to me.
Well, Greg, I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of things you'd be surprised if we could put them in front of your number one Rolodex. But
that's why you're on the show,
dude. Efforts,
so I'm glad you're here.
These are some efforts that's been going on for quite some time.
Okay.
And they've gotten to the point. For instance, like they ridicule American presidents and ridicule other white Americans for what they've done in the past. But look at, like, for instance, like Thomas Jefferson is supposed to have this relationship with Sally Hemings. They
right.
talk about that ratted to the bone. But what about Elijah Muhammad of the Nation of Islam? Did he not have supposedly relationship with young black women? And I go on, James Brown, Godfather of Soul, his relationship with a Tammy Terrell and a sexual and physical abuse.
Willie Brown, Kamala Harris. You know, Martin Luther King, I think, had multiple affairs, you know, but he also inspired, you know, this entire nation, and we're still quoting him to this day. You know, people are complex. And let me get Claire's take on this.
They talk about the Tuskegee experiment. Wasn't white males subjected to malaria back in the 30s? Injected with the... Well,
good question.
Yes,
or LSD.
So that's
CIA
the whole thing about critical race theory. They only want to tell the part that they can to denigrate and shame whites, which is wrong. You're going to tell history, tell all of it.
Well, Well, it's all about separating us and dividing us for you know, a totalitarian takeover. Right? I understand that. Claire, I want to get you a question on this. Other nations of the world, I know Canada has had problems because they have two national languages. So Canada, in many ways, is a divided country, but it's nowhere near as divided as some other places where, you know, artificial boundaries have been created. Do you see parallels to the United States in terms of people that are divided within a country that is causing, you know, that people are exploiting for their own purposes?
You know, I have to say my phone is going to die in a minute. This is a battery-powered handset. I'm going to switch over to my cell phone. But real quick,
okay,
before that happens,
yeah.
I think it's very obvious that the most cohesive society is a homogeneous society. There's no way around it. Human beings, you know, just like our closest primate cousins, are tribal. And there's no way to get around that. We can try and try and try, but it works best. Now, different things can unite and give you that homogeneity.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't necessarily mean just, you know, color and ethnicity, but the most cohesive societies on Earth, homogeneous.
You know, it's interesting. I hear the term that Obama introduced me to, you know, people that look like you. You know, you like people that look like you. And that is the most irrelevant thing to me I've ever heard. I don't understand that, probably because I've been in different countries. I've always been around people that I didn't care if they look like me. That was never even a criteria. Race was never a criteria, you know, because I was Canadian in a land of Australians who were, you know, who we had, you know, black Samoans and brown Maoris and, you know, Asian folks. And we had everybody else who had religion. So the difference is, you know, that to me was just normal. That was just people, you know. So I just see that as people. But this idea, I don't. Can anybody explain, you know, both Claire and Pianki, the idea, does anybody have any kind of, you know, affinity or feeling that if someone looks like you, that makes a difference? Because
yes,
I'm
absolutely.
Just like, okay.
Hold on.
Let's go to Claire and Pianki.
I'm losing
hold
my
on,
phone.
Pianki. You want to switch phones?
The proper term for that, what the proper term for that is skin is not kin.
Oh.
So,
okay.
So that's see, when you put the logical explanation out there to people, you got black gun groups. I was on a program yesterday, last night with a black gun group,
uh-huh,
and they love the Second Amendment. They out there, but they are afraid to talk for fear of the job. The same way that you have people who's afraid to say, I don't want to take the COVID. You had people that didn't want their face to be on camera when you was doing that roaming protest there where you are.
Yeah. And I'm not going to say who, but I know people, in the hospital.
And get them,
get
them fired, ridiculed. And this goes way back. Hubert Harris, back in the Harlem Renaissance period, used to be a street corner lecturer, ladder street corner lecturer. He'd stand on ladders, and he would lecture. Well, you had some prominent members, and I think it was W.E.D. Du Bois, tried to get him fired from his post office job. So those things go on. Amongst blacks, too.
This is fascinating. All right, let me get Claire back on the line here. This looks like she's calling on the cell phone here. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm back.
Go ahead.
On the cell phone.
Do you have a comment? We have about 2 minutes left here.
I didn't hear what just went before because I just called back in again, losing the
Well, can you mention something about the black Renaissance?
Well, what I say, Claire.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Let me tell you, when I said that this attack on black conservatism, of blacks who don't go along with the quote-unquote popular narrative, you know, you can go back in around the Harlem Renaissance period. You can go back with Marcus Garvey. It was blacks that sicked the FBI on Marcus Garvey, the NAACP type. It was that same type, W.E.B. Du Bois, that tried to get Hubert Harris, who was a street corner lecturer. He stand on a stepladder and lecture to a crowd. They tried to get him fired from his post office job. So that type of repulsion against black conservatism exists from black people. It's racism is what it is, but nobody wants to call it for what it is. Only whites can be racist. They only have the power.
Yeah.
Well, we know that's
yeah.
a bunch of nonsense. Why are blacks so afraid of, I guess, the independence and the freedom of black conservatives? Why, you know, you talk about intolerant. Nothing's more intolerant than someone that preaches tolerance. You know, so what are they really afraid of?
Reason why you have these gatekeepers that don't want to see school choice with vouchers. They want to hold those children in the present environment that they in, that's not taking them many of them no place. It's a failure, and because it pays, Greg, it pays.
Yeah, follow the money. The same way that I think that that COVID is a business that pays universities, that pays pharmaceutical companies, that pays the government. You know, people that can make a profit off their patents and royalties and everything else like that. Yeah, there's money. We got to find – this is another thing I want to look into. Claire, I don't know if you have any access to people who might know this, but let's see if we can trace the money back from Big Pharma to the government, not just royalties and license fees. But there's got to be a reason that everybody is enforcing this COVID business as strongly as it is, knowing full well that masks and lockdowns perpetuate it. Otherwise, we would have lost COVID last year. That vaccinations seem to be making things worse, because if vaccinations worked, we wouldn't have we wouldn't have COVID now. So everything is designed to perpetuate this, to perpetuate the business, and there's got to be a lot of money back towards all these government officials. We have 20 seconds. Claire, is that something that you would know about that we can talk about next week? Or no?
I have to apologize because I'm going to be out of town all week next week. I depart tomorrow, and I won't be back until the end of next week.
Okay.
I'm going to miss next week.
Once
be back
call
the week
say
after
hi.
That, though.
You can always call in and say
I could try, but I think I'm going to be on an airplane at the time.
Nah, don't do that. Although it would be fun to hear from you from 30,000 feet. I'll put that on my calendar. We're out of time now, but let's see if we can find the money trail back to all these government officials. And that Gene, Dr. Pianki, and Jonathan as well, who's also left. Thank you, everybody. This has been an incredible discussion, as they usually are on Thursdays. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Back tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock in the morning Central Time. And also, if you want to get us, support us, patreon.com/actionradio. And also, you can listen to us as you're driving by simply putting Action Radio into your phone and plugging that into your car audio. And I will see you tomorrow.